Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horse Geeks podcast. I'm Kirsten Nelson, and with me today is Deb Romero. The Horse Geeks podcast is where we look at horses and riders from the inside out. And so for Valentine's Day today, we thought we would talk about love and love with horses. And so I actually, the title I came up with today was Love Will Keep Us Together.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that song.
Yeah. So it's one of the things when we talk about loving horses and how we love our horses, I thought, you know, love is really what keeps us, it keeps pushing us to learn more, go outside of our norm. Horses have a way of pushing us into furthering our education and our learning. And it's because we love them that we keep seeking solutions for the horse we love when things are just going sideways or not working. And it's all too easy to just sell your horse, sell your problems, try to find something better. But we'll talk about that because I find people who sell their problems almost 100% of the time go out and pick a horse with the same issues.
Well, that's, you know, being in the habit, you know, and I think what's interesting is that it is a relationship. So yeah, we don't go out and sell our spouses or.
Yeah. And if there is an incompatibility and we move on for various reasons, we still have to look back and at our own contributions to the relationship. Right. So what are your thoughts on Valentine's Day about like loving our horses, or how would we give our horse a Valentine? Or
wow, that's a good one. So when I think of that word love, it puts me kind of into mommy mode, you know, like being a parent, love isn't always about giving them what the cookie or the treat or the whatever. But, you know, I think the way I like to look at loving my horses is, am I really listening to them and paying attention to what their needs are? You know, and I don't even know where I read it. It was probably online. Simple things, you know, to check in and say, is my horse stressed in any way?
Right.
Is there an environmental issue I need to look at? Is my feeding program correct for this horse?
So
I think
loving...
I was reading somebody posted something about a Cushing's horse and, you know, all of a sudden having problems. So that to me is, you know, keeping them on track, keeping them as healthy as their environment and everything as possible. And then I also look at the psychological aspects of love and what that means to the horse, not for me.
Yeah, because in any relationship, like there's a book called The Five Love Languages or something like that. And the premise of the book is, how do we receive the feeling of love?
Oh,
right. So all of us express love kind of in the way we would like to receive it. But that doesn't mean our partner, whether our partner is a person or a horse, is receiving what we're giving in the same way as that we intended. So our expression of love might not be received as the feeling of love by our horse.
Right. So what does love mean to the horse? How does, you know, that's a good one.
And I want to share, I'm not a super religious person, but this quote from the Bible is something, it's my favorite quote from the Bible. And when I'm out there actually working with horses, this quote has stuck in my mind for years. And I'll just share it with everybody. It's 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. So love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. So that to me is a super practical way that I think of love, especially when I'm working with horses. You know, I was a, you know, type A, ambitious rider, highly impatient. What did I get? I go out and choose hot-blooded horses, right? So it's like a double impatience, right? And love is patient, love is kind, just always stuck in my mind. And it's something I hear from riders all the time, that they struggle with patience.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. Or when we're using massive amounts of leverage and gadgets and force, could we call that kind? Are the methods more, you know, are any methods okay to get to this theoretical ideal that ultimately might be good for the horse? So are we justifying the methods of using leverage to get to a theoretical ideal frame for the horse that ultimately we believe is good for them? But in the process, are we getting there with kindness, or are we getting there through coercion?
That's a good point.
So love is patient, love is kind. Like, it just resonated with me as something to think about when I'm interacting with horses. And the rest of the quote sort of tells you what it's not, but that love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. I go, those are kind of the qualities that we have to develop as individuals to work with horses. And they push those very buttons in us. You know, so to put those words to love, I think is, it's more of a, rather than a romantic love, it's what you're talking about, kind of a parental love, mm-hmm. or a compassion. Compassion is also love in a more general way. And I think love is patient and love is kind. Like, that to me is where the rubber meets the road when I'm communicating with a horse. Can I be patient? Can I be kind? Because that's love that I would like to receive. And I know horses would like, they can receive that as love when we're patient and kind.
Yeah. And I'm really thinking about that when you said a lot of riders that you come in contact with have a, you know, they get impatient.
I would say across the board, that's one of the things I hear from riders all the time, is they struggle with being patient. So when we have an agenda or ambition, especially if we want to compete, it's very easy to lose our patience.
It's, yeah, and then it just goes back to, are we, especially in that mode, are we doing it for the love of the horse, or is it for us?
Right.
Yeah. So that's a, maybe that's the inner mix up with the riders on what patience is, because we have an expectation
and
that expectation doesn't get met in what we think is an appropriate time.
Right. Right. Mm. And that's where we get impatient and maybe unkind. Right. Yeah. Also, love never fails. I love that part of the quote, that love never fails. And I will often see, like, the only way to fail with a horse is to quit trying.
Because quit asking questions.
Yeah, or quit spending time with them, sell them off, retire them, shut down the relationship. That's how you fail. But if you genuinely love your horse, there's always something you can do to build the relationship or make progress in the direction of your goals. So love is kind of what keeps us trying again and again and again. And I think the way, what's important too, from the horse's perspective, is as prey animals, they care about two things. One is, do I feel safe? So a horse has a very keen sense of self-preservation. As a prey animal, they know they taste good to the whole world, right? So when they don't feel safe, they express that through what we call bad behavior. They become distracted. They go into flight response, fight response. So they can become a little aggressive or pushy, or they can be distracted, flighty, too fast. Those behaviors and that energy of defensiveness is the horse telling us, I don't care that you put me at a luxury barn. I don't care that you have a $5,000 saddle. I don't care that we won 18 blue ribbons. I don't care that you ply me with treats whenever I see you. That behavior says, I don't feel safe. So are we really, how we might want to express love might not be received by the horse because their number one priority is feeling safe. So anytime we give them the gift of feeling safe with us, we're expressing love in a way that they can understand. And like you said, as a parent, that's how you love your children, but it doesn't always mean it's gentle and flowery and full of rainbows, right?
Or sometimes those little heart kiss treats.
Right. Right. We hope for that more often than not, but sometimes it's setting boundaries or saying, no, don't do that. That's not good for you. Right. You can't do that. There's a boundary there because it's not good for you.
And I wonder if, cause I'm thinking about my horses and I think the more educated I get about the horse and how they work, the more patient I become.
Yes.
Yeah. The less I know about how a horse really functions. Like you said, you know, safety is their first thing. If they don't feel safe, they're out of there.
You got
one way or another.
Yeah.
And I think the more, like on one of the podcasts, the Umwelt paper saying how horses actually
perceive
and function in the world, you know, that was a real eye opener to me.
Right.
And our last podcast, when we talked about, are we really listening?
Yes.
Yeah. Are we taking maybe like in the Alexander work, are we pausing and interrupting our habitual way of communicating to listen and step back and say, well, you know, what is the dynamics that are going on here?
Right. So love is patient, love is kind means to me that when the horse is out there pushing my personal buttons, I have to be patient and kind enough to look at it and go, wow, my horse is expressing to me that he or she isn't feeling safe with me in this context or in this moment. Mm-hmm. So how could I, and asking that question rather than how can I make the horse submit? The question becomes, how do I help my horse feel safe?
Yeah, if you totally changed your thought, and I, you know, we talk about this a lot, it's all about the way we think about it. Is that really actually what's happening? So changing how we perceive, I think, is real important.
Yeah, and I think when we're motivated or when we remember, because horses, if nothing else, they put humans on a training program to become better people. Like to really work with horses, you learn patience, kindness, and most importantly, self-control to be effective with horses, right? So feeling safe, that high level, that high sense of self-preservation is so important to a horse that when they start to sort of test us or monkey around with us, it's usually for the purpose of asking us to prove to them that we are capable of noticing what's important to the horse and providing a sense of safety. That's how they test in the herd. Who becomes the alpha of the herd is not the biggest badass of the herd.
No, it's not.
Never. The badass.
I can attest to that in my herd.
Yeah. And usually the biggest badass of the herd is the insecure one that gets banished. It'll get ostracized from the herd, from a healthy herd of horses. And the alpha horse is the one who is the provider of safety to the other horses. That's so they test us and ask us to prove that we are capable of expressing love in a way that they understand, which is protecting and providing a sense of safety, number one.
And now that I'm thinking about that, it's very also, even though, you know, globally horses are, it's like humans, we all have the same makeup in our bodies, but there is that individuality of figuring out, because I'm thinking of my herd, and we've talked about this, my alpha mare, you got to go in there with your Jack Russell suit on when you go in the stall with her. Or she will just like put you where she wants to put you. And then, you know, my big 17 hand mare is, you have to take that suit off. Otherwise, you can't get near her. She's like, ah.
Yes.
And then, you know, little Plumlight's like, I don't care. Just love me. So it's, you know, I forget about that, that I actually wear different hats, probably like we do with people, you know.
Absolutely. Because what makes one individual feel safe can be very different from the next individual. But what I find interesting is if you really observe your horse and listen, the horse always tells us the way or the mode that makes them feel safe and secure. So, for example, a horse that kind of comes too close into your personal space and gets pushy might feel safer with closer contact, more touch, right? And maybe you have to set a boundary that says, hey, I'm smaller than you. I'm not another horse, right? But that horse is saying, I feel safer sort of herding up, right? Where another horse might want more distance, more personal space, and they don't feel safe too close to a person. They feel safer with a little more distance. Or horses that are easily distracted, it's like they want to know that you are as perceptive as they are. So for example, if we allow the horse to remain distracted and we don't say, hey, could you like come back and focus on me? Then they think we're not alert to the environment, that we don't notice what they notice. So they think we're incapable of providing safety because we're not expressing it in the way that that individual understands.
That's really interesting, because I joined this new equestrian seniors group on Facebook, and they're mostly trail riders. And I'm completely amazed at how many of them are supposedly going on these wonderful trail rides and they're getting bucked off, or I'm like, I don't get it. Is, and maybe that's it, where we're thinking that, I don't know. What do you, talk to me about that? What do you think?
It's a lot of times, like to me, when a horse escalates to the point of bucking, rearing, or bolting, I already missed all of the early signs of the horse telling me I'm starting to question my safety, right? Yeah. I'm starting to question my safety. So for example, a horse sees something on the trail and they're scared of it and they snort at it. What's our human instinct when we have that problem? What does everybody do?
makes them try to go look at it.
Go look at it, right? But they don't see like we see. They have totally different vision. And not only that, but let's say if all the five senses were even the same, if I'm walking with you through a graveyard on Halloween, and you see this shadowy figure over to the left and you spook at it, and I take your body and shove you towards it, how are you going to react to that?
I'm probably going to climb all over your skin.
And I'm going to buck and kick and bolt. It's like, oh, hell no. Like, it just, you know, we think you're asking the horse to make this leap, to not trust itself and override that instinct in order to trust you. But you're not proving any value to the horse by shoving them in the direction of what they're afraid of. So that's a great example of us, if we took that as a love-based gesture, we're trying to help the horse overcome a fear. That would be the most magnanimous reason we do it, right?
Yep.
We're trying to show our horse there's nothing to be afraid of. But the actions say something entirely different. So how that magnanimous thought is being received by the horse.
Exactly.
Is it's not landing like that.
Not for them.
It is not landing like that. Especially if you take them to it and the energy level is going up and up and up and up and up. It's like every time that energy, we all know the feeling of what it feels like the second before you get bucked off or the second before they bolt, because we've all lived through that. And when that energy starts to go that direction, that's the time I need to recognize that my horse is telling me I don't feel safe.
Yeah. So it really goes back to that being in that listening mode to figure out what happens before what happens happens. It, you know, it was probably 4 or 5 strides beforehand that the escalation in the horse started, and we're in la la land.
Yeah. Yeah. Or we think, oh, that's just the horse's personality. They're always anxious or they're always tense and snarky, but it's, they speak to us through their behavior. So the energy level coupled with behavior helps us understand when the horse is telling us, I'm starting to question if I'm safe.
Yeah.
Right. And as soon as they start to question it, we could, like, let's take the spooking example on the trail. Instead of taking the horse towards what they're afraid of, it's like little kids. If you have a little kid that's getting afraid, what do you do? What did you do with your kids?
I would usually remove them from the situation and have a conversation.
There you go.
Yeah.
Same thing. Or you could just distract them. Mm-hmm. Out of sight, out of mind, right? So instead of going towards the object, you could ask the horse to look away from the object while you pass it. You could change direction and go the opposite way if possible. You could go past it and ignore it. Like, this is why they invented blinkers for horses, out of sight, out of mind. That's why blinkers work, right? At reducing the stimulation that a horse might feel from, say, a windy day or a lot of activity in the environment. That's why blinkers work. So we can create invisible blinkers where we just redirect the horse's attention in order to help them feel safe. But if somebody shoved me straight towards, I don't know, a big fat spider, I would be, you know, I would be pushing and kicking and fighting my way out of that force of being pushed towards something that I don't like.
So what do you think in a loving way is to some other ways to earn the trust of your horse or the situation?
Well, of course, it always depends on the situation. But I think the horses guide us. Like, for example, what you're talking about with your mare, you put on the Jack Russell suit because for her to feel safe, she shows power.
Yes.
Right? So her way of feeling safe is who's more powerful, me or you, right? Mm-hmm. So she tells us how she feels safe, maybe by being aggressive or taking up, you know, coming over the top of you or being too close. And so she only, if she can overpower you, then you become the lower herd member that she protects, and you better follow. If you meet her at what's important to her, which is you learned, put on my Jack Russell suit and just show her energetically without being unkind, but energetically exactly. Say, I have more power. You need to back away from my space, right?
Yes.
That has meaning to that mare because she wants to get into a power interaction.
She does. And so, that is where she has taught me more about patience than my other two. Because she does, like, she pushes those buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be very clear in myself. Well, where, okay, she's pushing those buttons again. Where am I going with that?
Yeah.
And how horses, am I internalizing it?
So the power game she's playing is sort of who controls the real estate,
yes.
Right? Who takes over the space? And that's a power game between horses. So those kind of horses, it's a fight, defensive, fear-based behavior, mm-hmm. Right? So they use this power play to test, to see if you're worthy. Are you the better horse and capable of providing protection and safety? So what humans tend to do is match aggression with aggression, fight with fight. And they go, bring it, because I'm really
no
good at this.
No kidding.
They're like, they tempt us into the argument because that's how they feel safer. That's how they express their ability to provide safety to the herd. So if we match it fight for fight, they're usually better than us and they're bigger. So it's a dangerous game to play with a horse. But energetically, what you're describing, you put on your Jack Russell suit and energetically you play the who controls the real estate game, right? So instead of backing away from her, you ask her to back away from you, right? So kind of holding your ground without being unkind. There's no reason
right.
to be unkind.
And I think what you said, it's really important, is it's an energetic thing.
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily a physical thing. And I think that's real important. What kind of energy, thoughts are we bringing to the table every time we get near our horses?
Yeah, because if we go into fight, flight, or defensive mode ourselves, predator and prey don't get along. It's not going to work. We have completely different instincts and psychologies. So what you're describing is your Jack Russell suit says, I'm coming in as the Jack Russell, the small one, right? And I'm going to just play this space game. I'm going to pay attention.
I'm going to pay attention
to who controls the real estate. And when you notice and you do control your real estate, I bet she relaxes.
Yeah.
Because you prove to her that in a way she understands that's meaningful to her as an individual, you proved you know the game. And you're better at it than she is. And you didn't fight with her. You just said, this is how shit's going to roll.
This is it. This is how we talk.
Yeah. And so that you benevolently said, not going to happen. I control my own space. And that had meaning to her. That proved in her mind that you are a capable provider of safety because you noticed what was important to her as an individual. That's love to me.
Yes.
That is kind and that is patient. And a lot of times we might have to like curb our own. It's interesting because as women, we link corrections or boundaries or standing up for ourselves with anger or a high
force, some sort of a force. That's interesting.
Women tend to have to lose it before they just have clear boundaries. Like we have to get emotional sometimes before we make a correction.
Yeah, I was in a workshop this weekend, mostly women, and we were discussing, are we allowing ourselves to actually take up our own space?
Yes, because we associate kindness and patience more in the doormat category.
Yeah.
Right?
Doormat.
And that we can't say rude things or we can't speak the truth. We have to be nice, which is also low energy. Right? So for women, when we bring our energy up, there's usually a loss of control emotionally by that time.
Yeah. So, and in the workshop, another lady says, well, and I could tell when she came into the room, she took up too much space. You know what I mean? That her energy was just taking up the entire space, which you don't see very many women do that.
Right.
But it wasn't a visual thing. It's an energetic thing that I could feel as soon as she came in.
No, and for women working with especially difficult or aggressive horses, one of the things that helped me a lot that I teach is, can you, when you have to make a firm correction with a horse for the sake of safety, or like you're describing, put on your Jack Russell suit and make yourself bigger, can you do it with a smile on your face? Can you be calm and assertive rather than aggressive? Like a
That's
high
important
energy
words.
Aggression. Yeah. And so if I have to if a horse is pushing my buttons, I'll just pause long enough that I can kind of find my center, be calm, smile, and go, yeah, that's not happening. Like, it's just matter of fact, that is not going to happen here, right? That's unacceptable, not going to happen, like you would do with your kids.
And that's real important what you said about you pause. And, you know, we talk about that a lot, but I think it needs to be said instead of immediately reacting to the situation.
Oh, there's a lot of horses out there where like flight behavior to get away is a horse's natural instinct as a prey animal, especially one that runs fast for long distances. But if they're uncomfortable in their body, or some have learned the best defense is a good offense.
Yes.
Those horses suffer the most because they really trigger the fight response in the human.
Wow.
Right? So when we match fight to fight, predator to prey animal, it's a disaster. And usually if the human isn't landing in the hospital, then the horse is suffering greatly from that interaction. There's no love there.
There's no love in that. Yeah.
It's just survival on both sides.
Yeah.
Right. So that's not a conversation that's going to go anywhere. And that's where the love is patient, love is kind sort of brought me back into my self-control, center myself, and be able to smile and say, yeah, you're not doing that. That's just not going to happen. And that
sometimes, with this mare we're talking about, I can't find the solution within me.
So what do you do?
At that time. So I have learned, just stop, walk away.
Until an idea comes.
Until I get to a place of that inner calmness.
Yeah.
You know, that I'm not jumping to that anger, frustration. You know, I have to control it. I have to fix it. And it has to be now.
Yes. Or you know, if you take your Jack Russell suit and you forget to take it off and you go into your other horse.
Oh, danger, Will Robinson.
Yeah. Because your other horse doesn't see leadership that way at all.
Not at all.
You become a predatory threat to your other horse because she plays a different game for safety.
Yes.
Right. So with your other horse, when you take your Jack Russell suit off, how do you think your other horse senses your provider of comfort status? How does your other horse decide that you can provide safety?
She has, well, the alpha mare, you know, it's boundaries, rules,
yes,
communication.
Mm-hmm.
With this other mare, she is so attentive to your energy. You've got to become soft.
So
not melt, but just soft, open, listening.
And I bet she's easily distracted.
Yes.
With a lot of anxiety.
Yes.
Right. So that's another game, is I stay safe by being on high alert. It's a different game than your other mare, but your second mare is saying, that's how I feel safe. I feel safe if I'm highly perceptive of my environment. So again, you can match that by saying, I notice what you notice. Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, she's a classic example that if you tried to push her towards something she's afraid of, she thinks you're an idiot and she's going to take you out on her way to safety.
She's out of there.
Yeah. But if you redirect that busy mind and with calm energy, so you say, I feel safe and I notice everything in the environment too. I notice when your ear flicks this way.
And yeah, you've got to be on top of her. Yeah, everything, because she's highly perceptive.
Yeah. So when you show her, like say she flicks an ear or shifts her energy and you use an aid on the ground or riding to redirect her back to your calm energy, what you're telling her in that redirection is, I see it. I noticed. I gotcha. But don't worry about it.
Exactly.
Come back to my calmness, right? That shows her love because you're saying, I understand you're highly perceptive and so am I. And I can lead you to calmness by keeping your mental focus here, 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 here.
Yeah. And that's interesting because with her, it's repeating a calming thing that we've done before that brings her back.
Yeah. Repetition is her best friend.
Repetition is her best friend. Whereas the alpha mare I just feel like she's looking up at me going, really?
Again?
I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Really, human?
Yeah. Yes.
I'm like, I'm dying.
Yes. No, and my Arabian mare is one of the most clever horses. Like, she really uses her brain. So she's like Houdini. She uses her nose like an opposable thumb, and she can get out of anything, open latches, open gates, take down fencing, go over, under, or through whatever's in her way. And until I learned to be a very creative rider, if I go out and ride her or work her in a way that's repetitive, which helps your mare, my mare is like, are we done yet? This is so boring. Right? And she was the horse that I taught a lot of tricks. She loved learning tricks because she had such a busy mind. And then she got bored with the tricks because they're like, yeah, done. Right? So really going into creatively working with her mechanical coordination, getting deep into balance issues and spinal functions, that's where she finally started to go, you not might not be as dumb as you look. Right? She thinks all humans are slightly inferior to horses.
Well, what do you think about like Plumley? I mean, he's the typical, I'll do whatever you want to please you. And I see those horses, they're kind of the hardest ones to keep your head on straight. You know what I mean?
I think
because
this happens,
they love you so much outwardly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, speak to that, because those are the horses that usually end up getting hurt.
Yes, they've learned that the best strategy to feel safe is keep the human happy.
Yes.
Right? So it's a safety mechanism that if I do what my human wants, because if you tend, like a lot of people, the first thought of training is still primarily obedience, right? Submission, right? So a lot of horses learn that strategy, and we could say they love us, but really they're protecting themselves from us.
Wow.
And I find they just don't express their opinion very, very much as a strategy to remain safe. It's sort of like, and we even call it breaking horses, breaking their spirit.
I know.
I hate that.
I do too.
Like those words make me want to vomit.
Me
Same
too.
Same with obedience and submission. I go, there's no relationship in that.
That's
there's
a good
no,
point.
There's no respect for the spirit of the horse or the thing that drew us to horses as little girls. Like that magic is gone when you start thinking of training for obedience and submission. You will never have that magic. You will never share a mutually beneficial relationship with a horse. And so it's like horses that we get that have been trained to be obedient and submissive, I find it takes a little while for them to wake up. Like I have to be very careful making corrections for things they do wrong, because I want them to explore. I want them to experiment. I want them to have an opinion again.
That is so important, because he was just all, am I doing it right? Am I doing it right? And when you allow him, he's just now, I've had him 5 years, a lot, he's finally getting comfortable expressing himself.
And I've had horses that were so shut down that in the path of saying, sure, you can make that choice. Sure, you can make that choice. Not correcting them for different spontaneous choices they make. Some of them will come out. It's like opening Pandora's box. I mean, you'll get everything when they first wake up. It's like you'll get fight, flight, aggression. It just won't be the same horse, because when they're so shut down, they go, I'm not allowed to express my opinion. I am to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
Right. And so once you say, no, it's okay, you can express your opinion. I won't make trouble for you when you do that. Then boy, howdy, do you start to get some opinions and some expressions. And it doesn't last forever, but it's like they go, really? And they go a bit crazy.
Yeah, Plumley did that. You'd put him on a lunge line and he began to run frantically.
Yeah, because you're not telling him what to do.
Wait a minute. I need to calm myself down.
Yes.
I'm going to kill myself here. And I'm like, yeah, yes. Dude, you are.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes that's hard to watch.
It is. It's very difficult when they get that panic, frantic, when they're in a controlled situation, but not controlling themselves, or maybe never been allowed to control themselves.
Exactly. They've never had the responsibility of self-control. They've always been pushed forward or held back or always directed. You have no self-carriage in that relationship. You will never have self-carriage in the horse, because there's no human on the planet that can balance a horse better than a horse can balance itself. It's an internal complex coordination to balance. So when we think we can do a better job than the horse, we screw it up and we tell them it's not okay to have an opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Right. So then they just go, as a survival mechanism, I'm going to have fewer and fewer opinions. And all of these things I'm describing, people do too.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking the same thing.
Yeah. We do it to our children. So, of course, we do it to our horses. It's
everywhere. We do it. Habits are everywhere.
Yeah. But if you really, truly want a relationship, you ultimately figure out as a parent that you don't really control your children. And you ultimately find out in a marriage that you really don't control your spouse, no matter how hard you try.
Try to mold them into what makes you comfortable.
Yeah, that usually backfires.
Yeah. Big time.
Right. And the same is true with a relationship with a horse. We think we would be happy if they would just do what we want. Right. We would be bored. And that's how some horses really get shut down. And after they're allowed to express a choice or an opinion without being punished for it or overly corrected, that's when they also become curious about how do I find my sense of safety, particularly with my rider, or they explore the use of their body in order to find mechanical improvements in the coordination. They have to discover those. So they have to be free to make choices and think for themselves to actually find that coordination of balance with a rider. So it's just like, you know, I think we said last time too, the coordination of learning to ride a bike. Every human can do it, but it's a learned skill.
Right.
So if you have no instructor at all, you might figure out how to ride a bike on your own with a lot of trial and error and time and no pressure. You may figure it out. It might be faster if you had a guide, or if the guide told you, berated you, punished you, created pain, gave you a sense of being unsafe every time you made a mistake on the bike, would you learn to ride the bike easier or would it be harder?
Yeah.
You might associate it so much with pain that you don't ever want to ride a bike again once you're done. And those are the horses that won't stand still at the mounting block. They're like, oh no, I'm kind of like, this is not working for me.
And you know, wow, that is such a big subject. And it can go both ways. It could be that because of the fear, or, you know, are you allowing that horse? I see this a lot. People just, their horses take off as soon as they get on, you know? Yeah. So that to me is, we need to go back to the mounting block. If we don't have that in a loving, kind, respectful relationship of each other, it's not going to get pretty out when you get out there in the field. It's just not.
No, and the expressions of defensive behavior, which is the body going into the sympathetic nervous system of survival, it's a systemic change through the whole body affecting all autonomic functions. So it's not a small deal. And we recognize it with the energy of defensiveness, whether it's human or horse, we can sense that energy. And through the behaviors that are associated with fight or flight or freeze, like a deer in the headlights, right?
Yes.
Those are all fear-based behaviors when coupled with escalating energy. Even a horse that attacks us is screaming, I don't feel safe. It's a fear-based behavior, is what we have to understand in order to be patient with it. It's not, let's fight. Right? It's a defensive strategy for survival. So the way we express love is to help them out of the defensiveness, the lack of safety, help them shift into the parasympathetic nervous system. There's a gazillion ways to do that. And each horse guides us as to what's meaningful to them. So when we express love, love has to land as having meaning to the one receiving it.
Perfect.
Right?
Yes.
And I go, the number one thing we can all work on, because it's an ever-changing, it's also context-sensitive, environment-sensitive, weather-sensitive, whether our horse feels safe, right? But everything we lump into the category that we call behavioral problems in the horse is usually the horse just expressing to us or having shut down because they haven't been allowed expression. I don't feel safe with you right now.
And that's it. That's it in a nutshell. And that's important right now. And it can change.
Yes.
Very quickly.
Oh, and even things where we blame horses for being barn sour, buddy sour, you know, blah, 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 rushing home after the trail ride. All of that is the horse saying, I need to get to my buddy, to the barn, back to this, back
to that,
because it's my safe place. You are not my safety. Over there is where my safety is.
And that is key.
That's an unhealthy relationship.
Where'd the love go?
Right. So I think we'll wrap it up for today. It's getting a little long, but I'm going to reread 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 8. And I would just encourage you guys on Valentine's Day to show your horse a little bit of love in the way that's meaningful to the horse, which is number one, helping them feel safe. Number two, helping them feel comfortable within the work and with you up on their back or in the cart. So just take this out for Valentine's Day. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-serving. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always preserves. Love never fails. And you know, when I really think about that whole quote, I go, that's what horses give us all the time. Horses yeah. have every single quality that's described in that biblical passage. Mm-hmm. That's just who they are. So we can learn a lot by looking at how horses don't hold on to past wrongs, not self-serving. Some are easily angered, you could say that, but that's a defensive thing. But if nothing else, love is patient, love is kind, I think is something for all of us as horse owners and riders, is something we can carry with us on every ride. And especially when we come to that little bit of headbutting or button pushing or struggle, that we start centering ourselves with the thought, love is patient, love is kind.
Yes.
So happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Yes. Thanks for joining us. Please like, subscribe, blah, blah, blah. Make comments. And we'll see you next time on the Horse Geeks podcast.
Be kind.